Because of COVID-19, we were living a nightmare. Our jobs had gone. We couldn't afford the rent.
Every day, because of people's kindness, Threshold is saving 9 families from homelessness. Please support our Christmas appeal. Visit threshold.ie to make an instant gift. Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today, I can't believe it, today he has me talking about bogus self-employment. Anyway, look at, folks, if you could see him, he's grinning like a Cheshire cat, as the saying goes. How are you, happy head? You all right?
I'm delighted. We don't talk about it a lot on the pod.
Not on the pod, no.
And we should really talk about it a whole lot more. But I have to say, I'm delighted to have Billy along. I've heard Billy in person, and he's a genius. Now, before we get to that, hands in pockets time. Cost money to put these out, so stick your hands in your pockets. Become a patron. Patreon.com/tortoiseshack.
Listen, just want to go straight. Actually, you know what? We'll go straight into it. We are delighted to be joined by the chair of ICTU's Construction Industry Committee, Billy Wall. Billy, thanks so much for talking to us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
Not at all. Look, you were on previously with Martin. I wasn't along for that one. And I know you guys have spoken in the past in terms of what the situation is. And I saw only recently, obviously, questions were put to the revenue commissioners in terms of the scale of this bogus self-employment. And for our listeners, I suppose, the really simple thing is we talk about the gig economy. We talk about, you know, your delivery driver is actually CEO of Mountain Bike Enterprises and all of these things. You're specifically in looking at the construction industry. Just if we can, what are we talking about in a scale of money that we're missing out on in the state? I mean, that's the big question. That's what it boils down to.
Well, I think that's the real question. What is the figure? And I don't think anyone can put a figure on it. The Revenue Commissioner certainly can't put a figure on it. The figures have been thrown out. Patricia King has estimated the figure at 300 million. But you could estimate it at 500 million, you could estimate it at a billion, because we just don't know to the extent to which people are bogusly self-employed on a building site. And it's quite simple to actually have somebody designated as a self-employed person as opposed to an employee. Now, that's not to say that it's not just as easy to make somebody an employee, it is. But for the purposes of the construction sector, once you have them, and I don't need to tell you or your listeners, but once you have them as a bogus self-employed person, well, then the suite of employment rights don't exist.
Just on the, okay, so Patricia King has put it at that figure. Now, I know, Martin, we've had broader conversations across industries, what it's costing the economy. And Billy, you touched on one point that's important there. I suppose for listeners who aren't familiar with it, once you go into that, what as an employee who effectively is, you know, is an employee but are treated as self-employed, what are you losing out on? What are you giving up on, you as the guy who's doing it?
Okay, so you're giving up an actual wage. You're not paid a wage, you're paid a fee. So the Payment of Wages Act doesn't exist. You've got no right to holiday pay. You've got no right to redundancy. You've got no right. I can't say you've no right to a contract. You have a right to a contract. You've got no right to the Unfair Dismissal, the Unfair Dismissals Act. You've got no right whatsoever. Now, there is a catch to all of this. So you've no right to even minimum notice, which is you're required to, an employer is required by law to pay minimum notice. But there is a catch to all of this. In 2015, the government, the legislature enacted the Industrial Relations Amendment Act. And the Industrial Relations Amendment Act allows for registered employment agreements and sectoral employment orders. A sectoral employment order is an order of the minister that's laid before both houses of the Oireachtas. And once it comes into force, it applies to all workers of the class, type or group to which it is expressed to apply. So what that means is if you have, say, the construction sector SEO, that applies to plasterers, bricklayers, carpenters, painters, toilers, slaters, and various other categories of workers. And what that says is that those categories of workers are entitled to a minimum rate of pay, are entitled to a pension, are entitled to sick pay, and entitled to a death and service benefit that the employer must provide. Now, I know there's a lot of talk, and I won't divert, but I know there's a lot of talk lately in terms of sick pay. And the government can, you know, are looking to maybe introduce, and I use the word maybe, introduce legislation that would give rise to sick pay for people. Now, I don't know whether that's a runner for this government, but look, I'd be amazed if they did. But there is another avenue for workers to get and have an entitlement to sick pay. And that is if they work collectively to get into their sector, a sectoral employment order that provides for all workers, and the supporting legislation used the word workers, it does not use the word employee. So it doesn't narrow the legislation to employee, like the Organisation of Working Time Act narrows the applicability to employees. It doesn't have it wide, even though the directives all refer to the word worker. And the word worker is wide enough, as per the Industrial Relations Act, it's wide enough to cover somebody who carries out work personally. And a self-employed person or a subcontractor carries out work personally. And that argument has already been had in 2005 in a judgment on judicial review, where Judge Justice Murphy opinioned that that was the case, that Section 23 of the Industrial Relations Act 1990 was wide enough to cover self-employed people. So if a worker working in the construction sector falls ill, is employed as a self-employed person, that person is entitled to sick pay. Now, it's not just as simple as rocking up to the employer and saying to that employer, oh, by the way, there's a sectoral employment order that says that I'm entitled to sick pay because I'm a category of worker to whom it is expressed to apply. So what he has or what she has to do is take a case into the Workplace Relations Commission and have that decided in there, because that is the avenue in terms of sectoral employment orders to access your rights.
Billy, we've done a lot here on the podcast about the cost of housing and how the state can't, or how the private sector can't produce a house for the same cost as the public sector.
So can I just qualify that for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I only looked at it today. I got more reports from Rebuilding Ireland, and you know what I'm like, Martin. Once I get I need to read them. The Dublin City Council average price for a 2-bed that they were acquiring, so this is bought, whether it was via Par 5 or buying from, you know, a developer, €383,500. That's for a 2-bed now. It goes way up. It goes into $450 to $480 for your sort of 3-4 beds. And the cost in the Irish government's Economic and Evaluation Services report from October, so just a couple of weeks ago, said we can build the same units for €185,000. So it's half the houses for twice the price. Sorry, Martin, go ahead.
Yeah, a lot of what Tony says comes down to direct employment. And you had a story when you were in the Social Welfare Committee on Bogus Self-Employment last year about the refurbishment of council houses. And you told this story, and I wish I could get you to tell it here, Billy. Will you tell that story?
Well, I told so many, I brought so many, I'm not going to use the word story, Martin, I'm not going to use that word. But yeah, we have. So what we do when we find issues of bogus self-employment, we refer them off into the Workplace Relations Commission. But we have found issues of bogus self-employment on, as you say, local authority sites. Now, local authority sites can be capital sites or, in other words, they're from the capital budget or they're from the internal budget. So Dublin City Council have a number of, they don't call them houses, they call them voids. That when a house becomes empty, they call it a void. And they get contractors in to carry out the work. That work is carried out under a procurement contract from, what's the name of the department? The Department of Public Reform and whatever they're called, DPARS. They chop and change so much now, I can't keep up with them. But anyway, That contract says that they must employ people as per sectoral employment orders, as per registered employment agreements, and that any pensions or sick pay must be paid up to within 1 month. Now, we have found numerous instances of bogus self-employment on construction sites. We've brought that to the attention of Dublin City Council, and they haven't done anything about it because they don't want to do anything about it. Why do they not want to do anything about it? And you've just touched upon the point. And the point is, there is no competition to the private sector building houses in Ireland. And when you have no private, or when you have no competition to the private sector in Ireland, in any sector, be it building houses or otherwise, well, then the prices are going to shoot up. Hence, and I think one of the reports refers, I think it's the Irish Surveyors, quoted the same figures that Tony quoted there, about 385,000 to build a 3-bed and 400,000 upwards to build a 4-bed. But yes, the co-ops can build them, as Tony said, for 185,000, because you're taking the profit margin out and you're taking some of the soft costs out of as well, which includes...
And the land capture value is important.
Yes.
The developers using that hugely to inflate the price.
What you're hearing nowadays is you're hearing the narrative of that, you know, we've got nobody else to build the houses, so we're looking at giving this land to builders to build houses on, and they'll give us back something. But there's no need. You don't need a builder to build a house. I've said this before. You need ground workers. You need carpenters, bricklayers, plasterers, painters, roofers. They're the people you need to build a house. You don't need an actual builder. So until the government, and I don't think the government will, recognise that this is a real problem, because they don't want to recognise, but until they actually sit down and say, well, listen, we're going to start building houses ourselves. We'll have a municipal housing authority that will build houses all over the country, and we will employ people directly. Now, they say, we're not able to do that. Yet they're not, because the managers that they have in Dublin City Council are just incapable of managing people correctly. And that's true personal experience that I've had with them, is that you just don't know how to manage them.
You and I, we both attended at the committee for looking at bogus self-employment last year, and there were some heavy hitters there. Patricia King was there. We had Seamus from the NUJ who was there, and Seamus's story about how scared journalists are to speak up would really take your breath away, how bad it was. There was the airline union, the airline pilots union, their story about how bogus self-employed pilots have been forced to form companies, even outside of the jurisdiction, the lengths that airline companies would go to. But overall, the costs, and a very conservative cost of bogus self-employment in Ireland, was put in and around 1 billion when you extrapolate out the figures. Now, Billy and I both believe that it's far, far, far in excess of that, far in excess of that. And there is no impetus on the government, nor has there been, for going back to the PAYE strikes, to actually deal with this issue. They just keep kicking the can down the road. They will not stop, even to the point where that committee report is not published, despite the amount of
work. But Martin, they will say to you that the growth in these contracts is negligible. They will say to you, we've spoken to Seamus Coffey, Dan O'Brien, all of the economists.
I'm going to come back to you, and I'm going to say, well, let's look at some of the problems we've had in construction, particularly the likes of Pyrite, or we will say the places that are falling down now and they can't get anybody to be responsible for them. The state has to step in, or individuals are told that they have to pay to put right the flaws. That exists because there is level upon level upon level of subcontractor being used, and each level self-certifies the work that they have done. Problem is, these are fly by night because they are only set up to do a particular job. When they do the next job, it's a different company. It might be two or three different fellas going in together. So there's no accountability. Before the place is ever built, there is no accountability for anything that goes wrong. And the stated position of principal contractors in the Social Welfare Appeals Office is that every worker below the site level of site foreman is self-employed. So all of those people, brickies, carpenters, they all self-certify their own work, but they're ghosts. They don't really exist. They are employees who are labelled as self-employed. Am I right about that, Billy?
That's correct, yeah. So you're right. There are levels of self-employment. I could point to a number of companies, fairly large companies, that employ people in the craft of plastering, right? And I would say that 90%, if not more, are self-employed and are bogus self-employed. And what makes them bogus self-employed to me is the sectoral employment order, because they must provide for a pension, an occupational pension. But they've been doing it for years. We've told the revenue about it, and the revenue aren't interested. They'll say they are, but they'll tell you at the same time, well, listen, we can't come back to you with any information. We'll carry out our investigations and that's it. If anybody was watching RTE One last night, barrister, I can't think of his name, and representations were made to revenue commissioners and they took on board. Nothing ever happened to him. For years, he'd done people out of their money. And for years, the construction sector and companies within the construction sector are costing the state millions and millions and millions of euro in lost revenue.
I don't think anybody questions that, Billy. I really don't think anybody questions that at all. Even the people who were pushed back and say, even the revenue commissioners themselves, all of the employers groups and all, they will say to you, there's a level of this. What they will say to you, though, is that we're exaggerating it. For Martin to say €1 billion and then to say it's well in excess of that, they'll say, show me the numbers, show me the figures, and that is the pushback there's a growth in the gig economy, unquestionably. There's precarity coming to all aspects. I mean, tomorrow we're recording with people in terms of the third level precarity, where they're getting paid for a lecture, never mind given a contract. You know, it's ridiculous, the thing that's carried on there. But we can't quantify it. And is that because people are either, some people will tell you it's because it suits some people to actually go this route, or is that because there's just fear of actually not getting the next contract?
Yeah, it's fear of not getting the next contract. And if you stand up in the construction sector nowadays, you are gone. But to take your point in regards to, we can't put a figure on it. Well, the government themselves have put a figure on it. And the previous Minister of Social Welfare, Social Protection, from me, what was her name? Fine Gael.
Regina Doherty.
Regina Doherty had a report. She issued it in January 2019 that confirmed that bogus self-employment in the construction sector ran around 30%. Now, and if you take it nowadays that it's running at 30%, well, that's easy to make out a figure. And that, to me, would be on the conservative side of what it is, and they know, they do know, but they don't want to do anything about it.
On Thursday last, the chairman of the Revenue Commissioners was in the Public Accounts Committee, and this is the first time in about 20 years that the Public Accounts Committee have revisited bogus self-employment. Back in 1998 and 2000, when Jim Mitchell was the chairperson of the bogus self of the PAC, he instigated a round of investigations where they went out and they looked at 60,000 workers in the construction sector, and they came back with 12,000 of them were bogus self-employed. And that exercise was repeated 2 years later, and they got the exact same amount, about 20% of people being bogus self-employed. Skip forward to today, which is 20 years later, and they were asked in the chairperson was asked in the PAC, what was the rate of bogus self-employment? Now, Billy and I both know it's somewhere between 25% and 30% in construction. But he said he didn't know. So they said, well, how many investigations have you carried out in the last 12 months? And the answer was 1,600. That's how many investigations. Now, compare that to 60,000 2 years in a row, and then ask yourself, in those intervening 20 years, why have revenue not done anything to tackle bogus self-employment just in construction alone? It's 20 years. They've known about the problem. They've been able to put a figure on it and a cost on it, and they've done nothing.
Yeah. So
the question arises, why not?
Why not? Well, the revenue commissions are just there to collect tax. That's it. That's their function. Collect tax, hand it over to the state and say, here you are, you do what distribute it whatever way you want. And that's their role and that's their function. We've gone to the revenue commissioners and we've told them, you know, there's extra money here, as I know you have, there's extra money here that you can collect. But it's not a matter for the revenue commissioners to decide who's bogus self-employment and who's not. That's not their function or their role within the state. So, we've the cases we've taken to the WRC, we've won. There's one we didn't, but we resolved it. The revenue commissioners, when the decision is referred on to them, to say, well, look, there's a ball of money here that you need to collect. As far as we know, they haven't collected. And in one case down the west, with a subcontractor who employed his lads, all self-employed. We got the decision against him that he did employ the lads, bogus self-employed. And then when he got the decision and he had to pay whatever it was, 5,000 over or 3,000 over, he paid it on an ERCT.
So he effectively, but I suppose it goes back to what you've said, Billy, about the revenue commissioners. Their job is to collect the tax. And it's a phrase that sadly we use all too often on this podcast. The crime is what's legal.
Yeah.
And that is, go on, Martin, sorry. Well,
let me just come in there. I'm going to qualify this a little bit. Yeah, it's the Revenue Act as collection agents for the Department of Social Welfare on PRSI. That's their official story. So it's the Department of Social Welfare who have the sole obligation of making decisions on employment status. Now, that's from Minister Regina Doherty last year and the year before, but that's not necessarily the truth. Revenue have said that they're not bound by social welfare decisions. They can act independently. They simply choose not to. And that's key. They simply choose not to. They have every resource available to go after bogus self-employment, but they choose not to. It's a political decision.
Is there a question in there, Martin?
Yeah, Billy uses the WRC to tackle bogus self-employment, and you're knocking them down one case at a time. I think that's fair to say, Billy. You are, and you're having good success knocking them down one case at a time. I use the Department of Social Welfare and the Social Welfare Appeals Office to do the exact same thing, and I can only knock them down one case at a time. This is the way it goes. But the Department of Social Welfare is making group and class decisions. So all bricklayers can be classified as self-employed. All plasterers can be classified as self-employed. And they are illegal class and group decisions, meaning that with our best efforts, mine and Billy, we can only knock them down one at a time, but we can't knock down the unlawful decision in the first place that made them all bogus self-employed. How do we tackle that, Billy?
Well, I would say that the Department of Social Welfare are acting ultra vires. That's what I would think. So you can take a number of issues to the WRC, which circumvents the social welfare. And you can say you get a bogus self-employed person and they're working. We've took one recently. He was a truck driver. We were approached by a TD and said, listen, a constituent of mine working as a truck driver, self-employed, we believe he's bogus self-employed, will you take the issue up? And we did, and we were successful in the action. They've referred us to the High Court on a judicial review. Now, that's when they got the decision from the WRC. But you take a decision from the WRC, and under section, I think it's section 41, the adjudication officer gives a decision. And when the decision arrives, the respondent has 42 days to appeal that decision. If thereafter he doesn't appeal that decision, 56 days must elapse before we can go to the district court to seek an order from the district court enforcing the order. Now you have the power of law behind you in terms of your order from the adjudication officer. Now, the Workplace Relations Act does give you the legitimacy which your order from the adjudication officer, but the district court order would be a bit stronger, I always feel. If, for instance, then the employer still feels he's not paying, he can go back to the district court and seek a committal order. Now, that to me is far greater than going into the Department of Social Welfare and having them decide on what the issues are. And like the appeals process in there can just be so laborious. It goes on and on and on, as was the case with Miss Mahon in the Denny case. I think it was 7 or 9 years it went on for. And that's no way to get justice in this country.
Yeah, it took, I think, from scope decision to Supreme Court decision, I think it was 8 years all in all. It cost hundreds and hundreds of thousands in legal fees. And Sandra's life was destroyed from it. Anybody who's spoken to her will tell you that. And that's the only avenue for an individual to overturn an unlawful class decision that the Social Welfare Appeals Office have taken. And that's what you're up against.
Yeah, well, now again, you two are the experts. I'm just the pleb in the room. So if that's where it's going wrong, where is doing it right?
No.
Well, I'm going to argue that the Workplace Relations Commission to go in. So say a worker is bogus self-employed. Say the truck driver is bogus self-employed, and we go in that he didn't receive a contract in accordance with the Terms of Employment Information Act, that he wasn't given holidays and didn't get public holidays and whatever else. You can throw in whatever you like, and they are the substantive issues. And on the first day of the hearing, what you'll have to prove is your preliminary issue, and your preliminary issue is your status of the employment. And once that's established, well, then the adjudication officer will decide if he was an employee or if he wasn't an employee. And if he wasn't or if she wasn't, well, then there's no matters to hear under any of the various acts that's referred in. If he was or she was bogusly self-employed or incorrectly designated as a self-employed person, well, then the adjudication officer will adjudicate and will find in their favour and give them whatever. Now, they can only go back 6 months in the various pieces of employment law, but compensation can be awarded as well in certain cases. But that to me is the quickest avenue to have a piece of paper with the harp on it that will give you a little bit of leeway with an employer to say, well, listen, I have the decision now. Mm. You're behind the eight ball. What are you going to do?
I can, little anecdote on this. I got a decision from the scope section that I was an employee and not self-employed. The company appealed at the scope section to the Social Welfare Appeals Office, who overturned the decision. In the meantime, I took a case to the WRC, actually to the EAT, for constructive dismissal for seeking a scope decision in the first place. I won the decision in the EAT. So we have scope saying yeah. We have the Social Welfare Appeals Office saying no. We have the EAT saying yeah. And then the company appealed that to the Circuit Court. And what the judgment from the Circuit Court said was that the Social Welfare Appeals Office has jurisdiction. That's what I was told. And their decision stands.
Well, I suppose, look, I'm not going to argue that point with you. I'm not going to argue against the Circuit Court. But the Workplace Relations Commission was enacted in October in 2015. And maybe now the case has changed. I know there has been a couple of cases is taken to the High Court on a point of law, and the point of law is that the adjudication officer and the Workplace Relations Commission have no right to adjudicate on matters so prescribed, because it must be before a judge and all that kind of stuff. But I think it's called the Zawelski case, and forgive me, I'm not pronounced it correctly, but that failed. So, and our case, the truck driver, that's before the High Court as well. And I presume, I can only presume that that'll end up in the same decision. I can only presume that though.
Mary Higgins made some very good points, and she was excellent. She always is excellent on this stuff, yeah, Bill. She's brilliant. And her big point in the committee last year was that we're being denied good case law on all of this, because the decision on whether somebody is employed or self-employed is a legal decision. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of what you want or what you desire to be. You must fit the legal criteria. And yet we have the state willy-nilly deciding around the place who is, who isn't. And Alice Mary Higgins' point was very clear.
Can you make the point, please?
If these cases have to go to court, you get case law. But your access to the court is at circuit court level. Whereas Billy and I are talking about appeals that go to the High Court, which excludes a lot of people who just simply don't have the money to do this. They simply don't. Okay. Whereas the circuit court is a much more accessible level. And if you told the Social Welfare Appeals Office they're simply not allowed to deal with it, then this would all be in the circuit court and we'd have good case law on bogus self-employment. We'd have excellent case law.
I agree. And you know, to get justice, it can cost you money to get justice in this country. I suppose the difficulty for the Circuit Court is it doesn't have jurisdiction on points of law. The High Court is the first avenue in terms of point of law. You know that better than I do. As a trade unionist, I'll go back to you know, just the bare minimums, is that if you have a group of people acting collectively, all seeking the same outcome, i.e. we do not want to be bogus self-employed, we want to be employees, and there's 100 of them, and there's one employer. But there's only going to be one outcome of that, and that is that they'll be all employees. And it matters not then what the High Court says or what any other court says or an adjudication officer says. The industrial relations mechanisms step in, and they're then now classified as employees. But look, you know, that is difficult in the construction sector because it's a casual industry. And I think it was referred to earlier on, people stand up in the construction sector, you have no job after this job is finished, after the site's finished. And that's what people are up against. And I think until working people have a bit more faith, say, in the construction unions, we're still going to be talking the same thing year in, year out until that happens. And maybe in the next couple of years that will happen.
Now look at it this way. Okay, I remember Patricia King going in. I remember speaking when we were talking about the figure around $1 billion. So you want to make it real for people. What does that mean? Okay, so that's a children's hospital every 3 years. It should be a children's hospital every year, but we have a country that it's costing three times the price. But it's an additional 570 homes every year going forward. You know, it's all of these things that we need. It's all of the smaller classrooms. It's more teachers. It's more special needs assistants. It's all of those things that we all forgo because. I believe I'm stealing your line, Martin, that you had, because industries were recalcitrant and the Revenue Commissioner decided that some money was better than no money at all.
That's 100% what happened. That's 100%.
Hmm. I'd agree with that.
So what they did was they went after the workers and not the employers. And that's exactly what they did. And the employers have been getting away with it for scot-free. I don't want to keep us too long, Billy. We both agree that $1 billion is probably your baseline level on this. That's a big whack of money to put into any fiscal space. It's a huge amount of money every single year that's going directly into employers' pockets and not into, and this is the real important part, not into pension funds, not into hospitals. Now, the reason they're looking to raise the age on the pension fund is because bogus self-employment has bled it dry. So everybody in the country is going to suffer because some employers have gamed the system. And since Jim Mitchell was the last person 20 years ago to seriously look at this issue and seriously tackle it, since then nothing has happened, which can only be said as a tolerance or an encouragement at government level for the practice of bogus self-employment. Would you agree on that, Billy?
Absolutely agree, Martin. I'd absolutely agree to the point now that bogus self-employment has become the default in the construction sector. It's the default. We'll pay you 80 quid a day on an ERCT, or we'll pay you 200 a day on an ERCT. And to actually fight to get what you're entitled to is beyond your power. Yeah, but I agree with you.
Billy, well, thank you very much for coming in and have a chat with us. I hope when revenue commissioners are finished their stint inside in the PAC that we'll have some better answers. And I know social welfare are due in there too. So hopefully they'll be asked some difficult questions. And we can finally, eventually, after maybe 40 years, get to the bottom of bogus self-employment.
Yeah. Listen, I enjoyed being on. I always love talking about bogus self-employment, the effects of it. Because it is serious, it's a serious matter. And I'll finish on this. It's like you. I'm a parent, right? My family have been at the classroom for years, generations. My kids ain't going to the classroom because there is no future in it, because they're treated as a self-employed person. So when they get to the age of 65, there is no pension, because there isn't enough money to pay into a pension. And when it comes to the summer, there is no holiday because there isn't enough money to cover you for the holiday. So all those things, why would a parent want their child to go into the construction sector? They just wouldn't. They just don't. And because of that, the sector is suffering. And we've seen how much it suffered in Britain with the tower that went on fire.
Grenfell
Tower. And we've had a little taste of it now in Ireland with the schools project, 15 or 20 schools that were found to be inadequate in terms of construction. And now I know the matter is before the court, so I'm not going to, I can't really say, but these issues are cropping up and cropping up and cropping up. These didn't happen years ago.
I just want to share that sentiment. We had a near miss in the hotel up the road in Ballymun because fire that shouldn't be able to jumped levels because fire doors that were supposed to delay fire for, you know, 15, 25 minutes, depending on the standards, didn't meet the standards. So very much we've had some lucky escapes in Ireland, but it shouldn't take a tragedy for people to wake up to what actually happens and why this is the system that it is. So I suppose if we want listeners to understand a couple of things, it's that this is doing us all out of money. This is doing us all out of good public services, but it's also endangering people. That is ultimately what it's doing. It's endangering people. Listen, and I say, it sounds terrible, but I need you all to go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack and give us a couple of quid every month as well, because the simple thing is this: there's a ton of these pods. Like, I mean, this is probably my fourth interview today, and you know what, guys? We don't get anything for it, but we'd really love
We don't. But I mean, where else are you going to get to chat with people like Billy Watt?
Yeah.
Where else are you going to get to chat with them?
Please, if you enjoy what we do, if you think, you know, what actually you think it's worthwhile, show that it's worthwhile. I know people are struggling, but we're struggling as well. So it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Thanks for the support. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.